And they actually created Liberia. Today, Liberia, the name, common, you know, the free place. Of course, the capital, Monrovia, was after the president of the United States. But it was created with the idea of providing a state for the blacks to go back to and live in freedom. The irony of it is that today, the blacks of U.S. descent, who descend from the slaves who came back from the United States in Liberia, are now the elite class oppressing the blacks around them. So we see that oppression and class division is not simply a black-white question. But with the economic development in the 20th century, particularly after the Second World War, what we've seen is millions of blacks in America have moved to the cities. They've become part of the modern US proletariat, the working class. There was a time when most of the blacks were concentrated in the southern states. There were some counties which had 70-80% black population in some states. But with the economic development, there was a moving of millions to the cities. And by the time we get to the 50s, 60s, 70s, there are huge black populations in all the major cities of the United States. In this context, you have in the 50s the beginning of the civil rights movement. Now, here what we see is that rather the idea of going back to Africa or black nationalism in the sense of a separate part of the United States for the blacks, what you have is the development of the civil rights movements. And what the black workers are saying basically is, we're Americans, but we want equality like everybody else. We want to be treated as human beings on an equal basis like everybody else in this country. You had the development within this context of the Black Power movement, the Black Panthers, and what we see is that from an initial black nationalist perspective, you start to get an understanding amongst the most radical layers of the need for a socialist perspective. And Malcolm X is a good example of that. You know, he began as a black Muslim and a nationalist, but he came to understand the blacks in America, 13% of the population, you can't achieve freedom on your own, and you need to unite with the other oppressed layers. And who are the other oppressed layers? It's the rest of the working class, whether it's Latino, whether it's from, you know, white European origin, or whatever. And he understood that it was capitalism that created the racism, and you couldn't fight racism without fighting capitalism. These are the conclusions that Malcolm X began to draw, and of course, they killed him thanks to that, because he was becoming too dangerous for the US elite. Because if the idea that the struggle for emancipation of the blacks can only be in unity with the white workers, and you unite all the oppressed layers of the United States, then you have a powerful tool for transforming society along socialist lines. And then, of course, that would hit the interests of the capitalist class. Now, I can't go into the details. In all countries in the 70s, we had mass upsurge of working class struggles. Because of the lack of leadership, the movement declined. And in that context, what kind of ideas do we see coming forward? The capitalist class managed to divert the aspirations of the blacks along a different line. And it's not just in America. This idea of affirmative action, positive discrimination, as some call it, basically the idea of quotas, i.e., the blacks have been oppressed for years. If there was a job going, it would go to the whites. Therefore, we have to have a kind of reverse discrimination that we actually have to give more jobs now to the black population to make up for the balance. Now, the question is, does this method help to raise the consciousness of workers? Does it help to unite the working class? Does it move the situation forward? We would argue that the idea of quotas actually is simply sharing out the poverty. Because if you've got unemployment in a period of capitalist crisis, to apply the quota system means to say, well, there's a white guy who's poor, there's a black guy who's poor, they come for a job, we're going to give it to the black guy because for 50 years, for 100 years, we always gave it to the white guy. Well, you see, that poor white guy isn't going to say, oh, that's reasonable, because for the last 100 years all the others oppressed the blacks, oppress me now, and I'll be unemployed. It doesn't quite work like that. He will become resentful. He will start to, and it actually helps the racists in their propaganda, because they'll say to the unemployed white worker, the reason you haven't got a job is because of the blacks who are taking your jobs. We as Marxists would argue the reason you haven't got a job is because of the crisis of capitalism. There's unemployed black and there's unemployed white. But how does it work? I'll give you an example. This question of quotas and positive discrimination, it isn't just a black-white question. In Italy, for example, in the north, on the border with Austria, there's a small province that used to be part of Austria, the South Tyrol. It was overwhelmingly German-speaking. Again, there's no colour difference here. There's not even a religious difference. They're all Catholics, the German-speaking and the Italian-speaking are Catholics. But in 1918, I would say 95% of that province was German-speaking and it was part of Austria. Italy, that time, won the war. They were on the right side that time. And as a consequence, they took back the little bits of Italy that were still in the hands of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And in doing so, like all imperialists, weren't happy just to take the Italian bit, the Trento. They thought, well, from a military point of view, we need to have the Brenner Pass to defend our territory. In the middle, there happened to be a whole load of Austrian, German-speaking peasants. And they annexed the place. For 20 years, fascist regime forced these people to speak Italian. They went even to the tombstones of people and changed the names on the tombs to Italian names, those who had German names. They changed the names of the cities to Italian names. And for 20 years, it was illegal to speak your own language in that province. Furthermore, Mussolini actually gave incentives to poor southern Italians to emigrate to this province, to Italianize it. That was his idea. He successfully transformed Bolzano, or Bozen in German, into a city with a majority population of Italians. 75% of the city is now Italian-speaking. But two-thirds of the province is German-speaking. Now, the German speakers felt terribly oppressed. The end of the war comes, and in the 50s and 60s, you had the development of a nationalist movement. In the 60s, you had terrorism. The German-speaking population planting bombs against Italian policemen and headquarters, etc., etc. In 1970, they came up with a deal. They managed to broker a deal, the famous little package. And part of it involved positive discrimination, i.e. a point system, whereby if you were unemployed, you got so many points. If you had two kids or three kids, you had so many points. If you were married, etc., etc. And all this was to see who got the council houses, who got the jobs. Because of the discrimination of the past, the German-speaking population got extra points. So what would happen is two workers in exactly the same conditions would apply for a job, but because one was German-speaking, he was more likely to get the job. And also you had to speak German and Italian to get any state job. Now, what has the result of all this been? Well, the German-speaking population have always voted for the German nationalists, the People's Party. And whereas amongst the Italian-speaking population, you had a vote for the socialists, the communists, etc., over a period of time, the vote of the left has collapsed, and what emerged was the Italian fascists started to get a lot of support amongst the Italian population in that area. On the basis of what? Precisely. Why are not giving you council houses? Simply because you're Italian-speaking. You're not getting the job because you're Italian. The resentment that built up provoked nationalism, and you ended up with two nationalisms, one against the other, and not a solution to the problem. We would argue that in a period of crisis, that is what the application of this so-called positive discrimination ends up doing. We as socialists say we're not in favour of quotas, i.e. there's unemployment, so we have to share out, basically means deciding who's going to be unemployed. That's not the task of socialists. We have to explain to the black, to the white, or to the German or Italian workers, or whatever ethnic group we're talking about, that the lack of jobs is not due to the colour of the skin or the religion or the language that the other people speak. It's due to the capitalist system, which is in crisis. And it needs transforming. That's what we have to get across to the workers on both sides. We've got comrades in Brazil, where there's a sizable black population, and where, as I said, the bulk of the slaves that went from Africa actually were taken to Brazil. And the Lula government has recently come up with a law, it's called a race law, and it's presented as solving the problem. Now, part of it means that people will have to declare on their ID cards whether they are Brazilian or Afro-Brazilian. And if you declare, or you can prove that you're Afro-Brazilian, they're going to apply the same point system which I described earlier on in the South Tyrol in northern Italy, whereby if you're black, then you get more points. Now, I went to Brazil last year, and I listened to a discussion between one of our comrades, Miranda, who's a black comrade. He's the leader of the black socialist movement in Brazil, talking to a black worker. It was a trade union meeting, and they were talking about these race laws. This black worker, he said, well, I'm married to a white woman. And my kids, he said, well, it just so happens one of them looks very black. The other one looks very white. What's my family? Brazilian or Afro-Brazilian? Or is one of my kids Brazilian and the other one's Afro-Brazilian? He says, it's ridiculous. I had the experience of going to Sao Paulo, walking along the streets, and I was thinking about what the comrades were saying, and I looked at the street and I thought, how do you define these people? Because, yeah, there's some who are clearly black and some who are clearly white, but there's lots of people in between that I would not be able to define. And yet, the government is imposing this law, and the comrades say this is a divisive law. It will divide the workers. It will divide black against white. It's presented as redressing the injustice of the past. But what the comrades in the black socialist movement in Brazil say is, no, we're not having any of this. What we say is jobs for all, houses for all, good education for all. Because what's happening is this, in the universities, if you can prove that you're black, you get a little bit more advantage in getting a place at the university. And there have been students who have put on their paper Afro-Brazilian. They have to go in front of a committee that decides whether they are Afro-Brazilian. They look at them, and there have been cases, and they've said, sorry, mate, you're white. And he says, no, I'm black, you're white. And the other way around, too, it's happened. The committee decides what ethnic group you belong to. This is absolutely ridiculous. And yet it's presented as a progressive measure by the Lula government. Curiously enough, who supports this kind of policy? You'll invariably find in the labour movement internationally that it's the reformists, it's the Tony Blairs and the Lulas of this world who support this kind of policy because they understand deep down, and even the bourgeois accept it, that it's a useful tool in dividing workers. That's what it comes down to. And yet it's presented as progressive as solving the problem. The reason they support it is because it diverts attention away from the real class issues. Instead of having workers uniting in a class struggle against the capitalist, you have them arguing amongst each other about who should be taking the few jobs that are available, or the university places that are available, or the council houses that are available. They should be united in the struggle to change society. At the same time as they promote this, they promote as a minority amongst the black population. They try and create a black middle class to give them the feeling that, you see, it's working. Justice is being done. All they're doing is enriching a small minority, and I gave the figures before for America, while the overwhelming majority live in terrible conditions. Look at South Africa. I'm nearly finished. We had the struggle against apartheid in South Africa. By the way, I don't know if you've heard that apparently it was the sanctions that brought down the apartheid regime. I've heard that so many times. It was the sanctions, you know. Well, they did that for decades and it didn't work. And then suddenly, just by chance, The black working class of South Africa starts to build big, massive trade unions, metal workers' unions and miners' unions, and coming together in COSATU, and over a million members, and big class struggle. And just by coincidence, I don't know how you explain it, within a few years, the apartheid regime collapses, and you have a black a government with black faces in South Africa. It was the class struggle that brought that regime down. But look at the way the ruling class behaves. Think about it. Here we have a ruling class in South Africa, which I think all would agree must have been one of the most racist ruling classes we've ever seen in history, with the system that it governed through for decades. And yet, they're still in power. They still own the mines, the factories, the land. They're still exploiting the black workers. The conditions for black people in South Africa have not improved. If you see what happened recently, if you saw those terrible scenes where black, the very amongst the poorest layers of the black urban population, attacking immigrants coming into South Africa, particularly Zimbabweans. There's about 3 million Zimbabweans living in South Africa, escaping the hell of Zimbabwe, and they go from that to a place where some of them get burnt alive on the streets simply because they've got a little stall trying to sell a few things, or have taken a job or whatever. And again, we see a division in South Africa, which that particular division is not a colour division. There's a black Zimbabweans, black South Africans, but attacking each other and fighting each other because of the terrible poverty which has been created. And what have they done? Yes, we've got a black president, and the parliament is dominated by black faces. But has the system changed? No, it hasn't. Those people have been bought off. They don't live in the black working class neighbourhoods of South Africa. They now live in the same neighbourhoods as the rich white people, think like the rich white people, and defend the same interests. And we've seen this as a method of control applied by the bourgeoisie in several countries. They've taken the leaders of the ANC, which in the past they wouldn't have shaken hands with, they would have declared as terrorists and we can't deal with these people. They've offered them a nice villa, a nice job in the bourgeois neighbourhoods. They've given them political positions. Some of them have become managers and members of board of directors. Some of them have become shareholders. A tiny minority has done that, has risen up. And, of course, these people, because of their conditions of change, they've achieved their emancipation. You know, as they say, socialism one by one, starting with myself, as we used to say in the past. And this is what's happened with these people. And we've seen this, though, applied generally as a policy. Look at Northern Ireland. If you talk to comrades from Northern Ireland, they'll tell you where Gerry Adams is living now, where McGuinness is living, and where the leaders of the Sinn Féin are living. People who in the past were planting bombs and were responsible for killing people, they're now living in the top neighbourhoods, in the cities of Northern Ireland. And the running joke is, and they've got a nice villa in Donegal that goes with it. Jobs, cars, nice suits, they're hobnobbing with what were the enemy before. These people have solved their problems. Have the conditions changed for the Protestant and Catholic working class? They have not. Nothing has been changed for these people. In Nepal, we have the same process taking place. People who up until a few years ago were leading the guerrillas in Nepal are now in the government, they've been given, in the parliament, they've been given plush positions. In Palestine, they did it with the leaders of the PLO, if you remember. They would never negotiate with these people, and then they're brought into government. They are, the bourgeois will give quotas, they're positive discrimination, they'll promote a few blacks to leading positions, precisely to hold back the majority of the black and the whole of the working class and preserve the system as a whole. So we would argue that the solution to all these problems at the end of the day is change society. Change society in such a way that we can provide everybody with a job. Because when there are jobs for all, racism will recede. Now, it seems a bit, it can seem a little bit abstract, and maybe it's wishful thinking. But I'll just finish with this example. Belgium. Belgium is not exactly a poor African country. It's one of the wealthiest countries in Europe, with a high development of the economy. But it's divided. It's an artificial state that was created by the British, a little mess that they've created everywhere, built in such a way as to have two ethnic groups, Flemish-speaking and French-speaking in the south. In the recent period, because of the lack of any alternative from the left, they've managed to break up even the workers' organisations. There's the Flemish Socialist Party, and there's the French-speaking Socialist Party, etc. Well, these last few months in Belgium, it's on our website, you wouldn't find it in many other media outlets. Since January, there's been a spate of strikes, wildcat strikes, spontaneous strikes, and in Antwerp, which was the city where the Flams Bloc in the past had a massive vote, these are Flemish nationalists who say we should break with the French-speaking part of Belgium and have an independent Flanders. And with it went racism against the French-speaking and also anybody else. Extremely racist organisation. Well, in Antwerp, during these strikes, you had demonstrations of workers shouting slogans in French, like tous ensemble, everybody together, sending delegations of workers to the French side of Belgium to take part in the demonstrations. And what you see here, when the class struggle comes back, class unity across differences can be built up again. And that's a dangerous thing for the bourgeois, because once workers start to unite across the barriers, the race barriers, the religious barriers, the linguistic barriers, then they're in trouble, because you have a united working class which can struggle to change society. That's the perspective we should base ourselves on and spread throughout the labour movement.